All right, thank you for joining the ESBC Podcast Network. Where always the purpose of the podcast is to make me money. Tonight, Trevor Bauer is starting for your LA Dodgers. And, you know, he says that he only wants to have sex with women. He doesn't want to marry any of them. And he makes it clear in the beginning of the relationship. Which is good. He didn't make it clear to the Dodger fans that he didn't want to sign any autographs. So we keep it real here. So everything is clear and it's business oriented. But in capitalism, you have to collaborate in order for it to work. Communism, they say that capitalists can't collaborate. All they do is compete against each other. So sports betting is a collaboration. You get information from other bettors. You compete against the casino. You can compete against the bookmaker. And you compete against other bettors, right? And you compete around all the gaslighting, all the lying, and all the PR spin that they do to you everywhere, really, in your whole entire life, but especially when it comes to sports. Then we have our passions. Rule number one in sports betting is never bet your own team. So you have to look at your own biases, right? So I got it in the background, decision science, and that's used by the major corporations, scientific way to make decisions. We use business and financial concepts to get to that end. So every podcast is a business meeting. We have a purpose and an outcome. Purpose is to make out money. The outcome has been, luck would have it, Pac-12 basketball. That's all we bet. During the season, we got 66%, right? 52.5% is break even. So between 52.5% and 66% that we got, that is compound interest. Then you go, and I have a witness here. And I get a witness, I have one right here, Chad Nolan, going to be burning up an NFL camp near you soon. We got 71% conference tournament time. NCAA tournament, it's been the worst tournament I've ever had, but I still have made $20,000. So I can't complain. And as we head into the Final Four, and we've been watching these teams all along, so there's no reason why we shouldn't get all last three games aside correctly. And I haven't figured out the totals, but we'll talk about it a little bit tonight. And if you're the smartest, toughest person in the room, you are in the wrong room. So I brought somebody who's smarter, tougher, and 100% faster than me for now until I get in shape. Burning up an NFL camp near you. His brother is a starter for the Power 5. I actually call him the Week 5. He's from USF. We're the Power 6 ACC. We're just getting the Pac-12. But that's another conversation. His brother's starting quarterback 4. Your Oregon State Beavers made it to the Final 8 and covered 13 out of 14 times. Thank you for joining us, Chad Nolan, NFL superstar in the making.
Happy to be here, man. Let's happy to share some of the knowledge and stuff we've been talking about and, you know, doing amongst ourselves to give it to the people for free and so we can all win some money.
Yeah, and I haven't been mentioning that, but all these picks in the NCAA, I didn't mention the percentage, but we are still 56%. In the NCAA, but we bet on every single game. I don't know about you, Chad. Have you watched every single game?
I'd say I've probably watched like 90% of the games.
Right.
They maybe in the first or second round, I got a little burnt out at some point and like missed a game or two.
Right.
But it was, yeah, I mean, pretty much every game. I mean, and just overall in the season, I mean, coming into the tournament, I definitely saw all 68 teams play this year that made the tournament.
Wow, man, that's very impressive. Very impressive. Because I always try to do that, but, you know, work and life gets in the way. Even though I don't have any kids, it's amazing how many distractions, how many things come up, you know, that are distressing. And that takes you away from, you know, doing due diligence. And really what we'll get into and what we'll structure is that we use, and I use 100% somebody who has the MBA securities licenses we use business and financial concepts in order to determine what we feel will be the outcome of the game and be able to monetize it so consistently. We've done it for 12 years I've done it that I've tracked it in detail and paid for vacations. And my wife has not paid gasoline for the last 12 years, if it's not betting dollars. So you have a purpose, and the outcome has been that we've been fortunate, lucky, and good, and made a lot of money. And I hate to say it, but the $20,000 we made in the NCAA tournament, it's like somebody, the federal minimum wage is $750, right? Somebody works for a whole year to make that, and we made that in the tournament. And we always start with the Hawthorne effect. Whatever you track and measure, you improve its performance by 10 to 20%. So what were some games in the Sweet 16 that we got wrong? Because I know you and I collaborated on our picks that we should have gotten right.
Yep. Okay, so let's see. The first game, Gonzaga, we got that one right. Next game, Oregon, USC. That was one we got wrong. We were on Oregon. And
that game was Isaiah Wright.
Yeah, shot out of his mind. Exactly.
Right. He shot out of his mind. So in sports betting, you have to differentiate the games you got wrong because you had a bias, right? People with the George Floyd thing talk about unconscious bias. You didn't use math. Number two, rule of research. Number one is never bet your own team. Number two, because you overestimate the decision, is do your research. Maybe you didn't do enough research. And a lot of the games I got wrong during the tournament said I needed to think it through a little bit more and do more research.
Yeah.
My head got big over Oregon State, crushing all those games and crushing all those Oral Roberts games.
Yeah.
Before the tournament even started, we were talking about Oral Roberts in the conference tournament. And Isaiah Wright scored 4 points a game. And against Oregon in the game before that, against Kansas, he shot lights out. He got 26 points in one game, and then he got 22 points in the next game. So I would say that I needed to use return to the mean.
Yeah,
for the guy from Jeopardy makes a lot of money using return to the mean.
Because we ended up taking USC against Gonzaga in that Elite Eight game, and we didn't account for, you know, we should have known. We were right on it. We had talked about that regression, but we decided to keep riding it like he was going to stay hot, but we knew better.
Even need to stay hot. I think what – let me know your thoughts. Because you've played basketball. You've been on a team, right? Mm-hmm. Ride him as far as if he goes 5 for 20, because he ended up with 0 points because he missed 2-3 shots and boom, infield yanked him. So I feel if he would have gone 5 for 20, let's say he goes 5 for 20 and hits 15 points, they lost by 20. I feel that they're in the game because they cut it down to 10.
Yeah.
So if you would hit 3 3-pointers of that, let's say he's 3 for 12 with 3 3-pointers, they're down 1 now, and they're in the game.
Yeah. And another thing, too, that we had discussed was that we kind of missed was, you know, USC has played Oregon. You know, they're in their conference. There's a familiarity there. There's a looseness
that
they played with in that game, which they did not play with the following game against Gonzaga. They were very tied and scared, and they came out kind of shell-shocked, and Isaiah, nobody was taking the same shots they were taking against Oregon. There was definitely a different style. They just weren't as comfortable. They were more tight and just, you know, didn't flow as well early on in that game and got themselves into a big deficit. So that was a factor too we discussed.
No, you nailed the head on the head on that one. You're absolutely right about that. And I guess maybe the coach panicked too, because Andy Enfield's never been past the Sweet 16. And the guys that he was replacing Isaiah Wright with suck. Mid-major guards, Ty Saidi, Ethan Anderson, and they got exposed. And Isaiah Wright's a great athlete, man. He's lean. He's active. He's a tremendous athlete. They could have helped in other ways that these other guys couldn't, right? And one big advantage I've seen in the NCAA tournament It's guys that are tall and got a clear view of the basket. And that's what Isaiah Wright has. However, the fact that he has it, he can put a hand in the face of the Gonzaga guys, that Ethan Anderson and Edie cannot. Peterson came in and he did his thing. He did as good as he could. He's another mid-major guy.
Yeah.
Okay, I forgot where he came from, like Creighton, someplace like that. Mm-hmm. And he did his thing, man. And he scored like 9-10 points, but not what Isaiah Wright could have done on an off night that he had. And we should have them. Now, should is a command word, something you never would tell your wife or girlfriend in a relationship. You should. You say, no, honey, I prefer you, right? But we should have known that. And there's no excuses. Let us know, Chef, because you had a great analogy today about other people out there. Like, they haven't been talking about it, but I should. Action Sports charges you $300 for what we give you for free. We give you better information. We give you better percentages, better transparency. The rest. Because as I encourage everybody to listen to that last podcast I did with the guy that works at Butler University, wrote the book, The Cinderella Strategy. Butler, for being in a tournament a couple of years, has gained $2 billion, $1.9 billion, he said. I'll call it $2 billion with a B in benefit from being in the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot of money on the line, and it's not illegal for refs to make a bad call. What's your analysis on all things refs that we talked about earlier today?
So before I answer that question, I just wanted to point out one more thing about the USC game, then answer that. Sure. It was something you had mentioned to me that I thought was a great point. I want to give the people that corporate governance of SC with Enfield, right? Who is he, right? He's a wealthy man, supermodel wife, right? Made the Elite Eight, overachieved already.
Right.
His motivation when they got down, maybe not the best in-game coach. I think that was another thing that we kind of overlooked and thinking that, you know, they already made this run to the Elite Eight, like, you know, with Enfield and, you know, hit that. All those factors. That was just a good point that you had pointed out to me. I wanted to give to the people, but now on to the refs. So something that we saw in the Michigan LSU game is we were on LSU. We saw the refs going for Michigan, right?
Right.
We saw the Big Ten bias. Every Big Ten team, Michigan was the only Big Ten team in the Sweet 16. we looked at that game against Florida State, and completely saw that we knew the refs were going to be on Michigan, and Michigan ended up blowing them out. They were getting all the calls. Wasn't even close. We walked away with that one. That was easy money just from, you know, understanding. And then you came back in that Elite Eight game, Michigan, UCLA, and you kind of weighed, right, that ref factor with Michigan, and then you weighed the corporate governance with Nick Cronin, and his style was – a style that could overcome. They're a great underdog opponent and can kind of, you know, possibly overcome some decent ref, you know, bad calls with the way they slow it down. And if they hit some big shots late, and Michigan having a poor shooting night, I think like Franz Wagner went like 1 for 15, you know, terrible game.
Right.
Shooting.
Right.
It played out exactly how you had thought.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's why my wife hasn't bought gasoline from Not Bending Dollars for 12 years. And because you never stop learning, because life never stops teaching. And the reason we talk about corporate governance so much is because people have gotten rich with fundamental analysis. And big arguments now, you know, fundamental analysis between Wall Street bets, what's going on now. And then you get sold technical analysis that I'll break down systematically this offseason. I call it offseason before football season starts. Nobody's ever gotten rich with technical analysis. People have gotten rich selling technical analysis, but not using it. And a big element of fundamental analysis is studying a corporation, studying corporate governance. Who leads the corporation? Who's on the board? What's the corporate structure? What's the strategy? And more important than strategy, just as important as strategy, is execution, right? So before you evaluate an investment, before you put in money, before you make a decision, you study corporate governance. When I was engaged to a girl who had $11 million liquid, her dad ran a pension fund, ran a hedge fund. This is 30 years ago, we used to go to the corporation and talk to the people, right? The measure of the man, old school, the greatest generation, right? World War II, you measure a man, you look at him, right? You look at his body language. And we use that to determine winners, and it's made a lot of money. We did a podcast on the corporate governance of coaches. And when you look at Michigan, Michigan has the biggest alumni group. So Vegas could have made about $100 million in Michigan alumni betting Michigan against UCLA. So how does Chad Nolan and Josh Abner make money doing that? Betting UCLA, betting that line is going to be in our favor. And I call that doing business with Vegas. Vegas made all that money, and they gave us a low price on that UCLA line, and we'll do it all day, every day. Now, with the over-under, you look at corporate governance. You study Mick Cronin. How does Mick Cronin make $4 million a year? He did it in Cincinnati, slow down. That's what he did late in the season with Cincinnati. They would beat my guys, USF Bulls, in the AAC, which I think is as good a conference as anybody else in the country. We knew he was going to do that against Michigan. Slow down, and we'll get to our final football picks. But the man is a master slow down. And who's in the crowd? Nothing than Raleigh Massimino, right? From 1984, upset of Georgetown with slow down, right? Play a little bit fast in the beginning, but then slow it down. Tyler Campbell walking the ball up the court slowly and then taking shots with 4 or 5 seconds. The other thing is Michigan and all these people, right? These so-called guys. Remember, these guys get paid regardless who wins. We only get paid if our team wins and we cash the ticket. Yep. Other than that, we're wrong. We get zero.
Exactly.
People were saying, oh, Michigan missed all these foul shots at the end because they were tired. They missed that last shot. What's-his-face, the coach of Michigan, and Phil Martelli, Juwan Howard, and they kicked themselves because they had a tired team, and they go for a long jump shot, right? It was short because the guy was tired. Mick Cronin played 11 guys in that game. Only 5 scored. The other 6 guys had a total of 7 fouls and like 10 rebounds. So they were only there to foul and rebound and wear down the other team. Corporate governance. How's the strategy going to go? What are they going to go? Now, past performance is not indicative of a future result, but 95% of people can't change. So you look at what they did in the past to monetize the future. And that was our better bet there. And then my Hawthorne effect too was Gonzaga. I didn't think they were going to hit as many shots as they did against USC. And that game was going over all the way. I thought maybe infield would do something to make it under. That was going over all the way. That's when I got wrong, that I should have gotten right. So I know. Thank you for your time. Let's get in to the Final Four. What are your thoughts on the Final Four? And I think the Final Four corporate governance is going to be more important than anything else.
Yeah. I mean, the blaring things that stick out to me that we've discussed, right, is going to be Cronin and the head coach of Houston. What's his name? It's
Samson.
Kelvin Samson. Yep,
Kelvin Samson. Watching him my whole life.
So those two guys, right? We think are very kind of similar in style.
Right.
Very, very good defensive teams. I mean, amazing. Houston is a great on the offensive glass, which is something we look for in teams.
Right.
That effort's there. And not only the effort, but they know that they're not the best shooting team, and that's their edge. That they, you know, in order to make up for that, they need – so there's a high motivation on that offensive glass for Houston.
Right.
Yeah, so just and those styles play as good underdogs, and both those are the two underdogs. And they play very, very well to the under. So I know our thoughts are that the public is going to bet these totals up a little bit, and that we think that we can snag some unders with some good value before game time. And we think that the underdogs, with their corporate governance, give us a really good look to be profitable.
Fundamental analysis, corporate governance. What's the over under in the Houston game?
It is 135, I want to say, give or take. Right. I think it might be 134.5 now. It opened at 135.
And you just UCLA and them, it's like 156.
No, 146.
146. Okay.
Yeah. It's not. It's under 150.
So you think both those games will go under?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely. Yeah, I like the under on both of those.
All right, cool. And, I 100% agree, especially that UCLA game.
Yeah.
Because exactly.
I do like the UCLA more as well.
Yeah, man, and I'll tell you what, that plus 650. I've been watching UCLA all year, right?
Yep.
Gonzaga, I watched them three times in WCC. I always watch them against Pepperdine. I always watch them against San Francisco. And I think we've talked about it. When we talked about it, when the first time BYU played Gonzaga, I think. That was when Boise State covered against San Diego State. Mm-hmm. When they were playing back-to-back.
Yeah, so
Gonzaga were playing seven guys.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
UCLA point you mentioned is that Gonzaga has not played any close game.
No, they have not.
And we don't know how they're going to react in this game. So, long story short, I already took UCLA plus 16 right when that line came out. And it was 15.5. I took half the point and made it plus 16. Currently, on Bovada, it is at 14.5. I would take that half point, go UCLA, plus 15, under 146. And I would put, never bet what you can't afford. Never bet on a game more than 25% of your bankroll, and I don't even do that. I wouldn't even bet 25% of my bankroll, right? The most I bet on a game is like around $2,500, because I did bet 25% of my bankroll all the time, and I thought a game was going to go a certain way, and when it didn't, I started sweating bullets. So I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to do that to myself again. So I only go $2,500. I'm going to bet my usual amounts, keep my $20,000 in profit. However, I am going to go a little bit out of character and put $250 on that UCLA money line, which I got at 700. Mm-hmm. Plus 700. So my 250 would be like $1,500. So what is your thought on that one? I think that's the second of the two Final Fours.
Yeah. Like you said, I do – I like the under a little bit more in the UCLA game. We have a higher number, and I think Houston has a higher potential for transition points than UCLA, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I'll probably put a little bit more on the UCLA under than the other under. Based off that number being higher, right? Because we always talk about situational intelligence, right? It's the highest level of intelligence. So, you know, I think I'll put my full unit on, you know, my sides. I probably will sprinkle a little extra, I think, on that UCLA under, just because nothing crazy, you know, like if I'm going 200 on my sides, you know, I might just, and I'm doing 100 on my totals, I might bump that total up to 150 and put it in the middle just because I like it a little bit more. Right. Just because you're working with 11 more points, and Houston, I think, can run a little bit more in that transition. So that's the only thing there that I think could get that game to go over.
All right. And then corporate governance, Mark Few, great coach, Hall of Fame coach, gotten them to the Final Four out of nowhere. But he works his people too hard. His Some coaches have a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, recruiting guy, separates it out. He makes his guys do everything. Same thing goes for his players. I think they're exhausted. I think UCLA is a better talented team from 1 to 11. 1 to 5, Gonzaga is the more talented basketball player, but UCLA might be better athletes. But 1 through 5, basketball-wise, combination of athleticism and skill, Gonzaga, hands down. 5 through 11, it's UCLA, hands down. So to get in a situation like that, to get plus 700, I'll take it all day, every day. And to get that many points, it's a lot of points. Because even if Gonzaga gets a 7 to 10 lead, right, 10-point lead, the way UCLA plays, that's like a 20-point lead. And Mark Few has another game to play.
Yep.
In his mind.
And if UCLA in it late with all those guys they play, if it's within 5 points in that at halftime, I mean, you bet your biscuits that UCLA is going to be in it at that game playing 11
guys. Right. Because we bet equal amounts on each game and do things the right way, we can laugh and have fun about it, right? You can text me at halftime and say, man, I'm doing it. I'm going to go, bam, I'm going to do that. Because you're right. You're right, because stupid expectations people have that aren't grounded in reality. If they're up by 5 at halftime, they're freaking out because they're supposed to blow UCLA out.
Yeah, exactly.
So the next game, you hit the nail on the head with Samson. I know he's gotten a bunch of teams, different teams to the Final Four. He's been an NBA coach. He hasn't gotten teams to the Final Four, but he's gotten them to the NCAA. He might have gotten with Blake, the guy who's now on the Nets. He might have gotten that team to the Final Four when he was the head coach at Oklahoma back in the day. But regardless, he's a great coach. And the key to that game is that Houston are offensive rebounding monster. Yep. And talking about Oral Roberts. 22 sneaking in those offensive rebounds. That's why we knew that Oral Roberts was just going to cover, and they made us a lot of money. That's the key to Houston. And to this day, I'm not impressed with Baylor at all. Nope. I think if the one guy on Baylor has a cold shooting night, which he's due to have, Lucas Oil, down goes Baylor. Yep. What are your thoughts, Chad Noah?
So, just going back to, you know, what I was saying, we're talking about the offensive rebounding, and not only, like, are they good at it, but they understand that they need to do that to be successful. It's part of their game plan and strategy. Something you had mentioned to me, I think, is a good thing to throw out there is, Giroux is a player you mentioned that you haven't seen a player that skilled play that hard, right, which leads into that offensive rebounding. They know they got to get on the glass. It kind of plays towards that, what we're talking about. So that's probably the last thing that I finished with on that. I thought it was a good point that you had made to me that I really liked.
And something I kind of omitted that I should have put in one of the last podcasts. That's why we'll write it up and make sure it's on the website. All the transcripts are written up. The keys to the NCAA tournament. And a key that's kind of hit me this year is bringing the ball up. You know, who can bring the ball up? Because that's what killed Florida State. Florida State had nobody to bring the ball up. Yeah. And you knew at some point that was going to be an issue. Michigan had nobody to bring the ball up. They had the backup who was adequate, that was better than Florida State. But against UCLA, huge liability. And people talk about their in-game losing. That's where they lost the game, was that they did not have a good enough guy bringing up the ball. For UCLA, it's going to be Tiger Campbell. Yeah. And it's going to be interesting. They're great guys, and they're going to be whatever, top five in the NBA, Gordon Hayward types. But it's going to be interesting to see these tall guys with that high dribble from Gonzaga trying to bring the ball up the court.
Yeah,
I think it might be an issue. I say that because Giroux, he was supposedly had that deep thigh bruise, but I've seen him explode anyways.
Oh, yeah. And he played Ethan Thompson, I mean, better than anyone's played him all year.
Oh, yeah. And he's a great defender, right? And what he'll do is he will get your offensive rebound. He's lean enough. He's explosive. He has an explosive jump. And he can take the ball down court and pressure you. Mm-hmm. And you'll see this as he'll try, and the other Houston players will try to wear down the Baylor Bears, you'll see them rush up the court and not even do a secondary break, which North Carolina was really good at, where you rush the ball down court, they get into, you know, get back, they get into the transition defense, they stop the initial flow, you make a pass, and boom, you shoot it on a secondary break because you're open. Houston will do that, will fake twice, and then run the regular offense, which gets into corporate governance, right? Which USC didn't have, which killed them. The Gonzaga has that when things break down, you can run your regular motion offense and get a good shot. USC just started to go one-on-one for no reason. Exactly. And that goes to the respect they have for the coach and for the system. Especially Houston will do that. And Drew hasn't won anything. I'm not impressed. His family's a great coaching family forever. But this is the first time Drew, the head coach at Baylor, has been to the Final Four. And he's notorious for losing in tournaments. For me, it feels like Andy Reid. You knew Andy Reid. Really, Andy Reid lost to Houston. He was down by 30 points, and then they try to fake punt, and they lost. And they get to the Super Bowl. And then Andy Reid loses this time. Andy Reid always loses. Drew always loses. And I think, you know, we had the guy from the Cinderella strategy. I think the slipper is going to fall off Baylor. Give me Houston. I took a point, though, plus a 6 in the under 36. What do you think, Chad Miller?
Yeah, I agree. I like it. I think, we've gone through that game pretty good. I don't really have anything more to add.
Great, right on. Awesome. No, hey, you have to go. I think this has been an awesome podcast.
Yeah,
man. Gave everybody all the information we need, and we're ready, man. We live it.
Yeah, we're exactly.
You wake us up in a dead sleep, man, and we're going to give you better information than you can get anywhere else, better information than the $300 people are paying to Action Sports. And we'll give you final thoughts before we go with Winston Churchill. Anything else to add, Chad?
No, I'm all good.
All right, so we'll go with Winston Churchill. We're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow. We make a living from our labor, but you make a life from what you give. Thank you for listening to the ESBC Podcast Network.